Jan en ik waren op Tech Nation in Utrecht en daar kwamen we April Edwards tegen. April is een Senior Cloud Developer Advocate en DevOps Practice Lead bij Microsoft. Momenteel is haar rol Senior Enterprise Advocate bij GitHub. Ze geeft ons echt een inkijkje in de wereld van GitHub. Echt heel interessant allemaal en veel luisterplezier. Welcome, and we're sitting here with April Edwards, Senior Enterprise Advocate at GitHub and Hashi Ambassador. Can you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. Hello, everyone. I am April Edwards. I work for GitHub. I'm also a DevOps practice lead. I've been in tech for over 24 years. I'm based out of the UK, and I do a lot with cloud native technologies, app transformation, and now working at GitHub, I do a lot of platform engineering into the cloud, especially with cloud native and Kubernetes.
Ah, interesting. And what was your motivation to pursue a career in IT?
I fell into it by chance. I went to a school that supported computer sciences when I was like 14 years old, got certified, and I thought, oh, I'm going to go be a doctor now. Because in the US system, you don't go to university to go into tech. You get like an English degree and then go into tech or whatever, or you don't get a degree at all. So I was studying to be a doctor.
The tech people are all stupid?
No, they're quite smart. But I think like in the US, if you want to become a manager, you need that degree, but you don't need to go to university to work in tech. So when I was going to school, there weren't as many degrees around technology. There was like a computer science degree, but never like a sysadmin degree or developer degree as such. Computer science was very, very generic.
But it's that the sysadmin degrees or SRA, that's still young. It's a young occupation.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, when you're talking about cloud now, I work with so many people in the community that are getting their certifications, either like free certification vouchers, but learning is now free. We've lowered that barrier to entry in the community. And I think when I was starting out, we didn't have all these free resources. I had to buy a book. I had to attend a class. There was no online learning.
There was no internet.
There was internet. I'm not that old. yet. So I think, everything was by the book, right? And you had to learn. And then hands-on, you'd learn by doing. So now there are so many free resources that did not exist. So Microsoft does what they call Microsoft Learn. So hands-on learning platform with sandbox environments, phenomenal for learning Kubernetes and other cloud-native technologies. And GitHub, all the stuff is, you know, we write blogs, we have documentation for everything. How to do something is there. Wasn't there when I was growing up.
Also, I mean, your title is also said Hashi Ambassador.
Yes.
Is that HashiCorp by any chance?
Or? It is HashiCorp, yes. So we call ourselves Hashi Ambassadors. Yes. It sounds cooler, apparently.
Okay.
You know?
How do you become Hashi Ambassador
I just applied. They open up a call for ambassadors, I want to say October every year, maybe October, November. So you fill it out. And part of being a Hashi ambassador is being part of the community. So what's your contribution to the community? So I write a lot of content for Terraform mostly. I do other things, other HashiCorp products, but mostly Terraform because infrastructure code was one of the things that I fell into in my tech career. And, I do videos for them. I do blogs. I do all sorts of stuff around that. And I speak at their events and I promote their technologies into Azure, into GitHub. So because I'm a contributor, they let me become a Hashi ambassador for the fourth year in a row.
Oh, that's cool.
So I was there on the first year and I'm still one. So we'll see. We'll see how long I can maintain it. Yeah.
So you know Karim Satili probably also.
Mm-hmm.
He was in our podcast a few weeks ago.
Awesome. Awesome. I think it's a small community of people. And when you work on a technology stack, again, this didn't exist when I was a small version of myself or younger version. We didn't have these communities. And that is something that is so amazing. Now, the Hashi Ambassador community, like we have our own Slack channel. I met Eric Veld last week in person he's out of the Netherlands as well. He manages the community advocacy team here. So it's such a niche community that is amazing part to be a part of. And you can ask questions and you get answers. You're not the only one.
That's great.
Answer. Yeah.
That's awesome. back to GitHub.
Yes.
GitHub got acquired, of course, by Microsoft some time ago.
Yes.
But they also have DevOps.
Correct.
They're competing technologies.
Are you talking about Azure DevOps, I assume?
Azure DevOps.
Okay, so let's get right into the hard questions. I love it.
So I was sitting in it all day. You know?
I know. I love the hard questions. The harder, the better. So Azure DevOps has been through many iterations. So it used to be called Team Foundation Server. And if you've ever used it, that was a very painful product. But it became a cloud-based product, right? And Microsoft really developed it into a very mature product. It's made up of 5 to 6 components that deliver planning, source control, and CI/CD pipelines, test plans, all sorts of great features. And it's pretty much mature. It's not at the end of life. It's mature. It has all the features built in. So that product was developed under Microsoft. Everything's happy there. About 4 or 5 years ago, Microsoft acquired GitHub.
Yeah.
The reason why they acquired GitHub, there's many reasons. One is Microsoft is actually the largest contributor in the open source community. I'm sure you're well aware of that.
Yes.
They want to get closer to the developers. So what is the largest developer platform? GitHub. So I think our stats say like over 100 million developers, which I don't know how they get the numbers, but that's a stat we throw around. So that acquisition was made. When they acquired GitHub, GitHub was known for source control. Realistically, we'll be honest here, right? Yeah, it's our source control system.
Yeah.
I put my code in there. It's great for hosting open source projects, but it can do more. So there has been a massive investment from Microsoft into GitHub to bring up the features in GitHub and make it a platform, not just a source control repository. So when people ask Azure DevOps or GitHub, I always say it depends, like any tech answer. So Azure DevOps still exists. It's not going anywhere. It's how Microsoft still delivers their applications. So Windows is developed on Azure DevOps, so is Teams. But then they're putting a lot of time and effort behind GitHub as the new cool kid on the block. So you do see from a marketing perspective, GitHub is everywhere. Like, oh, this new feature here, this new feature there. So I'll use an example. GitHub has a product called GitHub Advanced Security. So putting security at the forefront with the developers into your cloud native development from day one, that product is going into Azure DevOps. And there's actually going to be some really good announcements at the end of May, which is next week, at Microsoft Build about some new features. So they are really making those products quite parallel in a way, but not equal.
I heard through the grapevine, of course, that they're not investing that much in DevOps anymore, and that's going to be end of life, and that GitHub, because my customers are saying, oh, well, I want to go to GitHub because DevOps is going away.
So this is a tough one. DevOps, Azure DevOps isn't going anywhere yet, but the future vision is that it would eventually be outdated down the road, but they're not stopping development on it. So interestingly enough, and I can say this as a former internal person, Azure DevOps had the highest rate of growth out of any product at Microsoft our last financial year, so last calendar year. And we didn't put a lot of investment into it. And there are various reasons for that. But this year, they've actually brought the team back and they're pushing out more features. So there's an Azure DevOps blog that you can go and see the new features. So they are actually putting features into it. GitHub Advanced Security is one of them. But the Azure DevOps team and the GitHub teams work really closely together to make sure there's feature parity in some ways. So it's not going away. It will probably go away. Let's be honest. Every product has an end of life date.
Of course.
There's no announced date. It's probably 10, 15 years down the road. It's not anytime soon. Now, saying that, this is Microsoft. They could rebrand the product. They could change their mind tomorrow. But from an internal perspective, there is no plan because all of our product groups are still developing on it.
Oh, that's cool.
But you're going to hear a lot about GitHub.
Yeah.
It's the new cool kid on the block. It's cool to be at GitHub. It's cool to use GitHub, right?
Yeah, of course. I've got my projects on GitHub. You?
Not yet.
No, not yet.
I'm getting there.
You're learning. He's learning Kubernetes. That's great. You had your talk about AI, and we're here on TechNation. Everything is AI.
Yes.
Is AI here to stay, or do you?
Is it a hype?
Is it a hype?
You could say the same thing about Kubernetes. Is it here to stay? It is the hype. Containerize the whole world, but we can't containerize everything, right?
Not yet.
As much as we'd like to, right? I mean, we can totally break down our monoliths and make microservices out of them, but we can't containerize all of our apps as much as we want to. But I think that's with any new tech. AI is playing a massive role. And one of the things we discussed is developer enablement, but then also guardrails. Is AI going to be too much? Is it going to be too? Is it going to take the humans out of the equation too much?
Yep.
Is it going to hit moral issues that we haven't yet to encounter? We're starting to encounter. So I think there's always a question. But I think we see AI in a lot of products. Microsoft's doing it in all their products. GitHub's doing it in all their products. It's making our lives easier. But will it overtake us? We hope not. And that's where the political debate is right now about morals and ethics on it.
Yeah, we've got a debate here in the Netherlands about, I think it's in Europe, about the AI Act. How do we go about AI, and where are the boundaries?
The regulation of AI.
Regulation about AI, yeah. About AI, our listeners are using Kubernetes, I hope. Probably. I'm gonna...
Else they're on the wrong podcast, maybe.
But...
ACC ICT is specialist in IT-continuïteit. Bij ACC ICT staat alles in het teken van continuïteit waarborgen voor bedrijfkritische applicaties. Of het nu gaat over Managed OTAP, Cloud en Kubernetes, ze geven hier invulling aan om door samen met hun klanten een toekomstbestendige strategie uit te stippelen voor het gehele proces van ontwikkelen tot en met productie.
You talked about Copilot.
Yes.
What can Copilot do for the Kubernetes YAMLs? Is there a way to help us get better YAMLs or
incorporate it in Kubernetes?
Yeah.
Absolutely. So what happened the first time you wrote YAML?
It broke.
Yeah. I forgot a space, or I put something in the wrong place, or I didn't format it properly, and I just banged my head against my keyboard repeatedly. So yes. Copilot can do a lot of things. So the way Copilot works today, if you were to literally this very moment open up one of your repos in VS Code or Codespaces or Visual Studio, it can help write those YAML files. Absolutely. It can help you generate those. And actually, I can go into, I'll use ChatGPT as an example because I've done it. Write me a GitHub workflow that deploys my images to Azure Container Registry and does all the things and hook an AKS in Azure to it. And it can do that. It'll spit out all the templates I need and all the documents. And it tells me why. So GitHub has a new vision called Copilot X. So it's great we can do this in Copilot now, but Copilot X will help us write better files with our pull requests into our repositories and in our code. So we want to take it a step further to provide more value and also finding bugs in our code more readily. So yeah. Copilot now is kind of like, I call it the AI pair programmer. It helps me generate. It helps. It doesn't do it for me. So I still need to validate what I'm doing without question. I can't just take its code snippet and trust it. I can try it, but I can't trust it. What we want it to do is then have more ability to see our code and go, actually, you could do this better. You could write this, write your Docker file better. You forgot this element. You should put in some tests into your deployments, all those things. Those are things that we need to think about when we're deploying, but we don't always remember to do it, or we're out of time, or it's too hard. It takes time to write unit tests. Takes time to write any tests.
And is it going to help us writing unit tests and automation tests in the future then?
Yes, that is the vision. So with the...
That's going to make a lot of developers happy.
Yes, and actually I was just talking to someone a couple minutes ago here at the event that they've started using Copilot to generate unit tests. They use ChatGPT, but it is available in Copilot X. But Copilot X is like a super beta right now. So we do have a wait list, you can join it. But ChatGPT wrote all of their, 5 hours worth of unit tests in about 3 minutes. And they went and inserted their code and it worked. I mean, it's not always 100%, but they're like, that's 5 hours worth of work.
It's a good start.
It's a fantastic start. And you have to think about it. You know, what could you do with better use of your time? How long does it take you to do things? And where it took that person, would have taken them about 5 hours, might take me 6 or 8 hours, right? And that's part of the development and deployment process. I could write a YAML file pretty well these days. Just want to point that out. Let's not test that today. but I've gained that knowledge, right? But it's taken time and iterations. If I could just say to Copilot, write me a YAML file to do X, and it spits it out and it's done in seconds, I'll take that over the years of experience I've accumulated and tears, gray hairs, and all those pain points, and I'd trade those in a heartbeat.
Yeah, and another point of that is that a lot of people are afraid that there will be a loss of knowledge.
Yes.
Everybody will be dependent on the Copilot or AI functionalities, so that developers in the future are just normal of random people that think I can write a program don't have to think about the logic about behind the programming.
You could say that's the internet also. My son was telling me, why do I have to learn this math thing, or why do I have to learn a history? I said to him, and this is a really easy one, you need to learn to find things, to solve the problem.
It's problem solving over the actual content sometimes.
And content that builds experience. Not interesting. Because I'm old. I started with books.
Yes.
I started
me too.
IT before internet. And now my life is easier because everybody's Googling everything. Yep. And that's the first step and then second step is then AI.
Well, we spoke about it on the panel today as well. So when you have AI, you can't just start from ground zero with like no experience. You can't run before you can walk. You need to learn foundational principles. So one person on the panel today said they don't let their junior developers touch AI or Copilot for their code.
That's cool.
They want them to learn from the ground up. So when I was at Microsoft and we'd run what we call open hacks, they were like 3-day events to learn how to deploy Kubernetes into Azure. We would start and spend the first day like baby steps, like kindergarten with a book. This is what Kubernetes is. This is how you do it. This is how you write a Docker file. These are simple commands. Call kubectl. And we teach those basic things. And then by day two, people go, oh, I can do this way. And I can DevOps it. I can put it into Azure DevOps. I can put it into GitHub Actions. I can automate it. And we want them to think about how to build that. You're building a house in tech. You know, whether you're deploying code to an application or you're building out infrastructure, you're building a house. You're going to build it on sand, it's going to fall apart. You want to build your house, you want concrete, solid foundations, rebar, and concrete to death it so it doesn't fall over. Same thing when we're deploying Kubernetes. We need that house of solidity. We don't want that house of sand. So we need to learn those basic core foundations. And it does, I remember going to school going, when am I ever going to need this again? And you're right, I don't use half the knowledge I used in school.
No, but you're using the problem-solving skills you learned on school to find your problems now.
Absolutely.
And probably you use some knowledge of that.
Absolutely. And it's all experience, right? That's what makes us so valuable in our older years is that we bring that experience in, and that's the human experience that AI cannot replicate or emulate at all. You know, we spoke about university a couple minutes ago. I have a degree. I have some majors, some minors, and I call my degree toilet paper. Like, I had to do it to, you know, go through it. I learned more about problem solving and the way the world works than actually textbook materials, because I don't use my degree. It's fantastic. I kind of enjoyed it, but I don't really use it per se. But it's those life experiences. We wouldn't be where we are today to bring that into our teams, to help build our things of knowledge, to architect new solutions without those experiences. So we do need them.
Exactly. Yeah. But do you think Kubernetes is a platform for AI, or isn't it there yet?
So that's an interesting one. So Kubernetes is really a control plane, right, when we think about it. And in Azure, they have put in a lot of services to take off the management overhead of what you're doing, what you're containerizing. And there's still a lot of overhead with Kubernetes and management. And that's what the misnomer when people start consuming Kubernetes. They're like, oh, this is easy. Yes, how's your networking knowledge? We have to talk about security. We still have to have these infrastructure discussions. You need that baseline knowledge. Yeah. You can't just walk in and do it. So I think there's a lot that can be automated. So what Microsoft has done is you look at Azure Container Apps, where they've taken off a lot of that overhead. We're delegating that infrastructure. So that's not quite AI, but we're delegating the hard stuff so we can get started quickly. We're lowering that barrier to entry. In terms of Kubernetes and AI, they will find a way. There'll be something that they can automate. There'll be a pain point. And I think what we see a lot with Kubernetes is add-ons and extra services. And that's where Kubernetes is really winning itself and lending itself in the infrastructure space. Yeah. Is you look at things like Dapper and the other things that help your applications deliver better. How do we do things better without, you know, what's going on? But AI is going to help in the planning process, the development phase, and the deployment. That's where I think we'll really see it. I think the cloud providers, AWS and GCP, I'm sure are doing similar things. I'm not as well versed in those clouds, I will fully admit. But I'm well aware of what we do in Azure. And that is, you know, we're making it easier to consume.
Yeah, but everybody's looking at each other. So
yes.
If Microsoft starts one thing, you can bet on it that AWS or Google will follow.
Has it? Because you see that with the ChatGPT thing, the OpenAI, they started the first thing, but Google was already doing it like 5 years ago also.
Yeah. But it's come along. The capability, the compute power has come along massively. If you remember, Microsoft probably 5-ish years ago really talked about quantum computing, and then it went silent.
Yeah.
But now we're doing massive amounts of compute. So it's no longer this quantum computing thing. It's still in the background. They're still processing things. Now we're leveraging that for AI and other services. So I think as we start seeing like Azure Container Apps and the Kubernetes control plane get more value into its product, you're going to start seeing that applied to other Azure products. products and other things. So I think Kubernetes is really a great way to bring those functionalities and features to other products as well. It's a great place to start.
So how do you see the future of Kubernetes?
I think it's going to be I'm going to use Dapr as the example. Dapr is the sidecar to Kubernetes, the enablement piece that helps drive Kubernetes to be a lot more efficient. So I think we're going to see a lot more benefit to a lot of the other third-party tools that are going to help drive that product, and that's where I see it going. I think we'll see AI come in, but I have no idea how yet. I'm not sure. I can't call that one yet.
It's still the hype.
Yeah, well, we've seen this in a company called Run AI. Mm-hmm. Have you heard about them?
Yep.
Yeah, they are building a solution on Kubernetes to run AI workloads on Kubernetes. Because what they said, you cannot...
The scheduler is not optimized for AI workloads because they're not doing queuing properly. Yeah, there's no queuing in the scheduler at the moment.
Also, that you cannot put custom resources on the GPU yet. So that's also a thing.
And GPU enablement's been a big issue in the cloud to begin with. So I think we're going to see a lot of features around the compute side of it without question. And other third-party companies are going to be coming in to make that more powerful.
Interesting for sure.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Well,
thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
And a lot of information we can take back home. And well, hope to talk to you again in the future.
Thank you.
Wil je interactief met Kubernetes aan de slag? Ga dan naar k8spodcast.nl/masterclass. Deze podcast is een initiatief van ACC ICT en wij zijn te beluisteren op onze website k8spodcast.nl via Spotify, Apple, Google Podcast en alle andere favoriete podcastproviders.